Chapter 88. CIA Headquarters, Langley, Virginia. October. Reese sat in Vic's office while the CIA man read from a stack of papers on his desk. "The FBI is assisting the Secret Service. It will be a while until we have the final report, but we have some initial findings. They found a shipping container that had been rigged up as a sniper's hide. It was insulated to conceal any thermal signature. The shooters had spent at least a few days living in it, waiting for the president's arrival." "So it was definitely a sniper team, just like General Yadid told Dr. Bellinger," Reese said.
"That's what it looks like. Two simultaneous shots targeted the Russian president, one connected. The other hit the column next to him. They found two U.S.-made Shytac rifles with Night Force scopes, a ballistic computer, spotting scopes. The works."
"Two shooters, two wind calls," Reese said.
"Exactly.
Then one of the shooters turns the gun toward the sniper that Freddy took out so that he couldn't talk. At that range, they wouldn't have been able to tell who was who. He was just shooting at a shape."
"So the close-in sniper was supposed to take out POTUS?"
"That's the theory, but there's no one to interrogate. We confirmed that he was Gregory Issei, a sniper on President Zubarov's FSO protection detail. His grandparents were Ukrainians who were forcibly relocated to Russia decades ago. Andrenov's PR machine is spinning Issei as a nationalist with an axe to grind, but we're not buying it. He's a known associate of Andrenov's head of security, Yuri Vatutin. Of the long-range team, one of them was found dead in the container. Looks like his partner, whom General Yadid identified as Nizar Katan in his interrogation, took him out with a 9x18 before vanishing. The dead sniper has been positively ID'd as Tasho Al-Shishani."
"So, one sniper shoots the close-in shooter on President Zubarov's Overwatch, who was supposed to take out POTUS, only it turned out to be Freddy. Then Nizar kills Tasho before getting away?"
"That's how it looks, Reese."
"How did they even know President Grimes would be there? That was close-hold information. We didn't even know until we got there."
"We are digging into that now. The NSA is pouring their considerable resources into mining all electronic data that even comes close to touching Andrenov. Danreb isn't 100% convinced that he doesn't have sources in the U.S. government, but admits that it's highly probable that President Grimes' itinerary came from the Russian side late in the game. Andrenov still has an intelligence network loyal to him in Moscow, just waiting for him to take the reins and promote them into what they see as their rightful positions of power. Danreb's analysis is that the primary target was President Zubarov, and that when Andrenov found out that President Grimes would be there, they activated Issei. President Grimes was a bonus, and his assassination by a Ukrainian nationalist would have ensured the U.S. wouldn't oppose a Russian move into Ukraine."
"And to think we got here from simply trying to flip Mo to give us Nawaz," Reese said, shaking his head. "Where did the sniper weapons come from?"
"ATF is looking into that, along with State, since a lot of their gear was ITAR restricted. Somebody pulled a string with SOCOM and had the rifle shipped to Turkey. That's not easy to do. We're not sure who did it yet, but we'll find out. It will be a short list."
"And the Novichok? How did that come into the picture?" Reese asked.
"Yadid connected Andrenov with the head of Assad's chemical weapons program, who for an ungodly fee provided the compounds to a cell whose job was to release the toxin into the colonnade in Odessa. 500 grams would have killed everyone there and untold thousands in the vicinity. That's a softball-sized portion, Reese. Exposure of that magnitude is 80% to 90% fatal, and if you were to survive, the neurological damage would be so severe that you would wish you were dead. It's not water-soluble, which means you can't decontaminate an exposed site. the entire area wouldn't have been habitable for the next 20 years, which is what we are looking at for the catacombs now. All known entrances and exits have been hermetically sealed up by hazmat teams. Thanks to your actions, the only Novichok casualties are the four terrorists you entombed down there.
But that doesn't make sense. They were already planning to kill the president. Why plan a chemical attack as well?
And Drainov knows our security protocols almost better than we do. He's also a geopolitical strategist. I talked with our chem bio guys. They estimated that the amount of toxin Andrenov's team had ready to disperse would have killed 200,000 people. The president's limo is equipped with an overpressure system designed to keep the outside air out and seal it off from a chemical or biological attack. The idea is, if the Secret Service got the president to his vehicle, he would be protected. The president of Russia had a similar countermeasure in his vehicle. The snipers were for the presidents, and the Novichok was for the crowd and the worldwide response to a CBRN attack. It qualifies as a weapon of mass destruction, and you know what that means. Rhys did know what that meant. An attack by a country or entity with WMD meant all bets were off. The attacked country had carte blanche to respond en masse. From what Rhys knew of Andrenov, it would have meant a consolidation of hardliners in power and tanks rolling into Ukraine.
So Andy was right, Rhys stated. This whole operation was about political positioning. Taking Zubarov out opens the door for Andrenov to step up. A Russian nationalist ready to lead his country back to prominence as a dominant superpower. If a Ukrainian killed President Grimes, it would all but ensure the U.S. wouldn't put up more than rhetorical resistance to a Russian invasion of Ukraine. And a Chechen responsible for the death of President Zubarov would allow the Russians to possibly maneuver right up to the borders of Turkey and Iran. That's quite a land grab.
And the Novichok nerve agent would seal the deal. The UN probably wouldn't even pass sanctions if Andrenov moved forces south in response to counter a WMD threat at their border. Andrenov needed both, Vic continued. He needed President Zubarov out of the picture, and he needed world opinion and support for an invasion of Ukraine. With Andrenov convinced that Islam poses an existential threat to the long-term survival of ethnic Russians, Danreb thinks a hardline party led by Andrenov would result in large-scale Muslim eradication efforts on a scale not seen since Stalin's Great Purge.
Well, he's nothing if not thorough.
There's something else, Rhys. Novichok is different. Like I said, it's extremely stable in that it doesn't wash off. If the president brushed up against his vehicle or against a contaminated Secret Service agent when they transferred him to Air Force One, even with a decontamination station, he wouldn't have made it.
Well, he can thank Dr. Bellinger for going back in to question General Yadid.
He did. He also wants to thank you, Rhys.
Rhys's eyes narrowed.
This assassination attempt and the chemical scare really shook him up. He's expedited the presidential pardons for you, for your friend Katie, and... Vic looked down at a file on his desk. For Marco Del Toro, Clint Harris, Elizabeth Riley, and Rafe Hastings.
Rhys nodded, remembering all that his friends had done to help him avenge his family and his team. There had been an emptiness to those killings, born of pure rage. Their purpose had been death unto itself. What he'd done since Freddy tracked him down in Mozambique had been different. The purpose of the killing he'd done on this new mission had been life.
The president also wanted me to express his sincere condolences on Freddy's death and on the deaths of your family.
Rhys nodded again.
He wants you to get that tumor of yours checked out ASAP. Any string he can pull, any favor he can ask, you just say the word. He wants you to get your surgery, and then he wants you to come back in.
Back in?
Like we talked about on the Kearsarge, Rhys. He wants you to come work for me. We briefed him up on what we know about the past few months. Andrenov, snipers, Amin Nawaz, Mohammed, Landry, a CIA mole, nerve toxins. It all gave him pause. He wants you to keep doing what you did to keep the country safe.
Reese took a deep breath, seeing the smiling faces of his beautiful wife, Lauren, and little daughter, Lucy, waving goodbye on that last deployment, eternally frozen in time. They'd never grow old, feel hurt, pain, disappointment, joy, or love. They would remain forever young, an indelible fixture in his memory.
"Tell him I'll think about it," Reese said, remembering Freddy and the sniper still out there who put him down.
"I figured you'd say that. There's also this," Vic said, handing Reese a series of still photos taken from news footage of the event in Odessa.
Reese stared down at them, unsure of what he was looking at. "Who's this?"
"That's Oliver Gray, Andrenov's mole. Facial recognition has him in the colony just prior to the hit. We don't know where he is now."
Reese looked closely at the photos, suddenly interested in what was on Gray's wrist. A vintage Rolex Submariner.
"Coincidence?" Reese wondered. "A lot of people wear Rolexes."
"When we find him, I'd like to know about it." "When do we hit Andrenov?" Reese asked.
"We can't, Reese, at least not yet. That foundation of his has bought him a lot of friends, including plenty in Congress."
"He killed the president of Russia and attempted to kill the president of the United States. My partner's three little kids are about to bury their father, and you're telling me that he threw one too many fundraisers?"
"He'll go down, Reese. It's just going to take some doing. We know he's behind all of this, but we've got to sell it to the right people. And we have to do this legally. We need tangible evidence, and trust me, we will find it. We're tearing apart his electronic life right now."
"Where is he?" Reese asked quietly.
"Reese, this agency has congressional oversight. We can't just kill whoever we want and keep it a secret. As much as we might want to."
"Where is he?" Reese asked again, his voice cold.
"Working on that now, Reese."
"Well, while you work on it, I'm going to take some leave.
While I'm gone, could you have someone put together a timeline of Gray's movements, both duty stations and leave dates and locations for me, with a special emphasis on all travel between 2001 and 2004?
"Of course. Why?"
Vic asked, a bit puzzled.
"Just curious. Probably nothing."
"And could you get what you have on Andrenov during that same time frame? I'd appreciate it." Vic nodded.
"I can do that for you, Reese. Does that mean you are coming on board?"
"It means I'm considering it."
"I'll let you know when we coordinate the ceremony for Freddy's star on the wall. I know the president will want to be here, too."
"I'll be there."
He stood, shook Vic's hand, and walked out of the office.
Mr. Reese,"
Rodriguez's assistant said, stopping him on the way out and handing him a folder.
"What's this?" he asked.
"You never set up your direct deposit, so those are your paychecks and some other documents from Human Resources."
Okay, thanks."
Reese shoved the stack into his small pack and walked toward the elevators. On his way out of the building, Reese stopped at the memorial wall and placed the palm of his hand on the spot where Freddy Strain's star would be carved.
"I'll handle this, Freddy. Rest easy, brother."
In his hotel room that afternoon, Reese pulled out the paperwork and glanced at each page. There was a welcome packet from Perryman Incorporated, a Rosslyn, Virginia-based company that he'd never heard of that apparently was his current employer. There were a handful of paychecks, some information about setting up a direct deposit service, and a letter-sized envelope with a crest and H.M. Treasury of Westminster, London, printed as a return address. Intrigued, he opened the envelope, tossed it into the small trash can below the desk, and opened a letter printed on heavy embossed stationery. It was signed by the Chancellor of the Exchequer and the Permanent Secretary of the Treasury.
He skimmed the letter and quickly retrieved the envelope from the trash. Inside was another slip of paper. A check in the amount of $4,171,830. It was the 3 million British pound reward for the killing of Amin Nawaz, courtesy of Her Majesty's Treasury. God save the Queen.
Chapter 89. Reston, Virginia, October.
Rhys turned on the television in his hotel room as he packed a small bag for his trip south for Freddie's funeral. The late President Zubarov wasn't even in the ground when the talking heads in Washington began suggesting that he be replaced with proven leader and global philanthropist Vasily Andreyanov. Senator Philip Stanton, another protege of super lobbyist Stuart McGovern, was one of the leading voices supporting Andreyanov's return to Russia. Stanton, who always insisted that combat-wounded Ranger veteran accompany his formal title, had become a staple on the cable news channels since his election to the U.S. Senate. Stanton had won the Wisconsin Republican primary and breezed through the general election thanks, in no small part, to his status as a veteran of the Iraq War. Though he did serve as an Army officer in Iraq, his position as a signal officer meant that he rarely left the safety of the forward operating base to which he was assigned. On one of his few forays outside the wire, his unit's convoy was struck by an IED. The 19-year-old private first class driving his vehicle slammed on the brakes, causing then-Lieutenant Stanton to suffer a laceration on his forehead when his head hit the dashboard of the up-armored Humvee. He put himself in for a Purple Heart after receiving 2 stitches on his forehead, the same award that went to the young men who were killed in the lead vehicle that took the full force of the explosion. He spent the rest of his deployment writing a book about his overseas exploits and had reserved the web domain www.philipstantonforpresident.com years before. He now had 3 books published, all ghost-written, leading some of his former soldiers to joke that he had completed more books than deployments. Stanton wore a dark gray suit with a miniature Ranger tab and Purple Heart ribbon on the lapel and had grown a beard to complete the special operator look that had become popular on social media. Rhys shook his head as the senator espoused his expertise on global strategic policy thanks to his single overseas assignment as a junior officer. Calling himself a Ranger was intentionally misleading. He attended the Army's grueling 8-week Ranger school after completing the Signal Basic Officer Leaders course, but never served in the famed 75th Ranger Regiment. Technically, he was Ranger qualified or Ranger tabbed, but was not Ranger scrolled. Having worked with Rangers on numerous deployments, Rhys had nothing but respect for their capabilities, professionalism, and bravery. By calling himself a Ranger, Stanton was intentionally misleading the public to believe that he had been a member of the elite special operations unit rather than a graduate of the school. There was no dishonor in being a Ranger-qualified signal officer. Why did guys like this have to make a good story better? Not really stolen valor. Borrowed valor, perhaps?
Once again, Senator Stanton stated in a tone that made Rhys think he'd practiced his delivery more than a few times. We have seen Islamic extremism rear its ugly head in its desire to build a worldwide caliphate. The murder of President Zubarov was yet another battle in the broader conflict. Russia needs a proven leader in the struggle against these terrorists. If the U.S. doesn't act, our democracy could be next. To think that a fellow combat leader like President